Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky, proud partner and supporter of the Republic of Ireland women's national football team.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, football show, you're welcome along. Joe Malloy with you this evening. It's Champions League evening. Kenny Cunningham is in studio. He was just saying there during the news, it's so good to be back with you, Joe. Thanks, Kenny. Let me hit with you this. You like a conspiracy. I can just tell by the head in you. So The Athletic have reported, they've been looking at what's going on here.
The Athletic, did you say?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's a online news.
Right, say no more.
Football, sports.
Move on,
outlet.
Yeah, move
subscription on. Based, actually. Doing very well. Yeah.
Do you subscribe?
I did in year one, and I just found I wasn't reading it enough. But I would say more often than not, at least once, twice a week.
Is that because you got afraid? They said we'll give you 3 years
if you publicly endorse it. No, paid
put
for
put your
it.
Name behind it.
I just said I didn't read it enough.
Freebies.
So
you get more of that going forward now. Profiles going up and off the back of the rugby. And
can I finish?
Yeah.
So
good luck to you.
The Athletic have reported that Southampton have been tactically stopping play between the 60th and 70th minutes in order to hydrate their players. So Kenny, in 14 of their 24 league games, players gone down requiring treatment on the pitch. In the meantime, the players have all been given energy gels to keep fitness and energy levels high going into the final third of the game. The games in which this didn't happen were pretty much over by the time the 60th or 70th minute happened, e.g. Liverpool's 4-0 win being an example. Mysteriously, nobody went down injured there.
That's not a story, is it? It's not a.
Is that gaining traction?
Is that actually gaining traction, Joe? Are you?
I don't know if it's gaining traction. One of the lads mentioned it. I thought that was quite interesting, and I just wanted to see if that was anything that was going on back in your day. No.
Well, people taking fluids on board and it's stoppage and play.
People saying, "Lads, 60th minute, it's your turn to go down injured," without fail.
No, I understand what you're saying, like concerted effort to kind of but you know, generally speaking. You know, it's always been the case a little bit in terms of whether you're breaking up play at that stage of the game, wherever it is, whether that's in your best interest or not. I think it's a big issue in terms of like, not a big issue, there is an issue in terms of stoppage of play. I mean, for quite some time now, the authorities have got it wrong and have been in terms of why they stop play in terms of players going down. We're getting a lot of stoppages for players being injured for no reason. I mean, the only reason a referee needs to stop a game is for a potential head injury, Joe's, unless I'm mistaken. Yeah. You know, there's safety of the player.
You're talking about opposition putting the ball out when another player.
I'm not talking about opposition. That's another thing. That's another part of the argument which I don't understand. No, I'm talking about referees now.
Stopping the game.
Consistently stopping the game.
I haven't noticed that as much.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, they're under pressure. Players stop playing. Players point the player down. There's huge pressure put on the game on the referee, but he'll, you know, so kind of referees are facilitating this as well. For me, it needs a stronger line from the authorities. Play doesn't stop for the start. Play doesn't stop unless there's a head injury to a player. And if there's a natural break at the end, the ball eventually does go out. Yeah, get the trainer on if you have to. Get the player off the pitch, I'd say, would be the best thing to do if he needs to get that treatment. But I wouldn't be overly bothered about it in terms. This is an absolute outrage. Players taking fluids on board between the 60 and 70 minutes. It's going to happen to an extent. Yeah, it's concerted. Yeah, there is intention there on behalf of the players, but
big deal.
Yeah, big deal. Yeah,
move
I'd
on.
Be more concerned in terms of broadening it out into a why is the game being stopped? Delivery players going to ground. Why are players still kicking the ball out? Why are the opposition players kicking the ball out when other players go down? I don't understand. Because players now are kicking the ball out when their players go down.
Yeah, and then they get.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a discussion in the changing room, not necessarily Southampton, where managers saying, between the 70 and 80th minute, make sure you go down if we have the ball and we kick the ball out, because we know we're going to get the ball back.
Mm.
Or at the very least, we're going to kick it 60 yards down the pitch. I'd be more worried, concerned about that type of conversation rather than, you know, sit your ass on the ground for 20 seconds so we can get some kind of fluids on board. Yeah.
I didn't think it was a huge story. I was just going through the various bits I've done and caught my eye as an interesting one.
2 minutes, we're never going to get back to y'all there.
That is true, Kenny. We'll try and edit it out of the podcast. In fact, no. They're stuck with it now. They've already listened. They enjoyed it. They'll be watching Southampton and that'll be at the back of their minds. Now they'll be sitting there watching Southampton saying, do you know what? They'll turn to whoever they're watching the game with. Just watch here between the 60th and 70th minute.
Oh my God, they're actually taking fluids on board. Look, the story was right. The story was correct.
So latest at the San Siro, 49 minutes on the clock, Inter nil, Liverpool nil. We've been updating throughout the evening, so I don't necessarily want you to repeat yourself ad nauseum. But just for the podcast listeners or people coming to us, how would you sum up that first half generally?
No, I've enjoyed it. It's a good game. It's a decent quality, better quality from last night, to be honest with you. Inter are doing well, but it's not surprising. Got a good solid team, well set up, defensively sound. They've gone after Liverpool in terms of pressed them high. Their counter press has been good. When they've given it away, they've gone after the ball quickly, having immediately taken a step back and, you know, withdrawn into their defensive shape. Because of that, they've kind of disrupted Liverpool a little bit. Liverpool's fullbacks haven't been in the game in advanced areas, as we're used to seeing. And Liverpool's kind of creative players, Thiago and Harvey Elliott, haven't been on the ball often enough in the key areas of the pitch.
The point I thought was interesting, which you made as well when we were chatting, is that Inter have a genuine back three. Most back threes become a back five, and I was referencing that Manchester United Man City game at Old Trafford earlier this season where Cancelo and Kyle Walker had a gazillion touches each. Whereas in Inter's case, they really are throwing the fullbacks on and trying to pressurise Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold. There's a bravery about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're getting in their faces. They've always done that. Even the back three, to be honest with you, Joe, you'll know it's kind of the likes when Liverpool's front, the likes of Mane and Salah, they'll come on the inside a little bit deep, won't they? And what you'll find, generally speaking, as well, even in the back three, kind of three natural defenders won't want to follow them in there. You know what I mean? They'll hold their position, they'll pass them on to midfielders in front. Well, these won't. Bastoni on the left-hand side and Skriniar on the right, they'll actually travel into midfield as well. And they're told, you know, don't pass that man, actually follow him in there. Don't allow him to receive the ball in space. You know, put pressure on him, force mistakes, turnovers. So they're even actually quite proactive in that respect, even the back three stepping forward, not just our wing-backs. So, yeah, so Liverpool haven't had it their own way. That's what I'm saying. Mm. It's as simple as that. And off the back of that, they've kind of broken and, you know, created a couple of half-decent chances. But they do give you opportunity. Playing that way, committing so many players high up the pitch, Joe, you know, if you're good enough to play through that press and get the ball into forward areas, then the likes of Mane, Jota and Salah are going to find themselves with more space than generally they'd be used to with that narrow back five that you were talking about.
Mm. We haven't talked in a couple of months. Liverpool generally, where do you think they are?
Yeah, probably about where they deserve to be if you're talking about in terms of the league table. I think a lot of what they've done this season has been quite impressive, particularly kind of the front three and the kind of rotation there. There's been some outstanding performances. Not perfect, to be honest with you. A little bit of looseness around the place, probably defensively as well. Probably ideally, you'd say conceding more chances rather than goals than we've seen previously. Yeah. People talking of Leo Burnley chances they had over the top, but there's been probably a little bit too much of that maybe over the course of the season. But I think they're in a good place now, getting players back.
Mm.
Just feel as if maybe just a little bit of momentum building for them now between now and the end of the season, which is going to be important because they're going to have to find almost top gear if they're going to pull in Manchester City, which I still think is possible, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they win their game in hand. There's only 6 points in it.
No, they're capable of doing it. Yeah, I think they're in a really good place at the moment, but they probably need to find maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, because it felt around Christmas time like they weren't quite in a position to chase down City at all, where now it feels if City had a wobble, they might suddenly be able to kick on a touch. Are you of the school of thought, which quite a few are, that Van Dijk isn't quite back to himself?
I think that was the case probably for 6 weeks of the season. I think that was pretty obvious. It looked to me more of a mental thing, you know, very kind of in terms of his movement, change of direction, you know, which was maybe understandable in terms of maybe protecting the knee, not having a huge amount of confidence in it. I think there was a game there at one stage, I think it was maybe the end of September, October, and I thought, wow, he's got through that now. You could see it in terms of that kind of sharpness of movement. I still think with him, though, you might think I'm being utterly critical here. I know it's like one of those things you can't be seen to criticise Virgil van Dijk, but just a little bit of casualness with him still. You know, I might have spoke to you before a couple of years ago. It's that kind of God complex, you know, how good he is. He knows how good he is. Everybody knows how good he is. Don't try not to allow that to seep into your game, just in terms of, you know, a little bit of a switch off, concentration levels, maybe not quite. Just get a little bit of a hint of that with him, even now, a little bit, you know what I mean? Just in terms of how he carries himself. Does that mean his performances have dipped? Or am I saying he's not playing at the level? No, I'm not saying that. but just occasionally with him, you do get a bit of a sense of that. I think that Liverpool high line plays in to that as well, in terms of the risk which they take and always have done and will continue to do. That's not going to change. The fact that never changed last year, Joe, remember the injuries that they had?
Yeah.
Van Dijk with a big injury and the other players who went out with the team, and they were playing with kids. Nat Phillips, wasn't it, there, and young kid at centre-half. Fabinho had to go back there. If ever there was a time you had to change in terms of dropping 10, 15 yards down the pitch and alter your approach or your philosophy in terms of how you play, that had to be it. That had to be. I hadn't got that pace at centre-half, that speed recovery in the team. But yet, nothing changed.
Mm.
Klopp was like, no, this is it. This is our mantra. This is how we play. I don't care. So if it didn't change then, it's never going to change.
And okay.
I'm not saying it's a massive hindrance to them. Obviously, it's part of why they're so good. That high line, nice compact shape. They can push everybody up the pitch. They go after the ball. You know, small distances between. Everybody's in contact. So that's a huge part of the game. Don't get me wrong. But there is an element of risk by applying that approach, that kind of high defensive line. Particularly the likes of maybe Joel Matip, good defender, I know, but probably his recovery a little bit at times, a little bit kind of suspect.
Mm.
Not so evident tonight, is it, with Konate in the team? Is it absolutely, you know, is a racehorse in terms of his speed of recovery? But no, I think overall, I think Liverpool are in a very good place going into the second half of the season. Carabao Cup final, FA Cup, obviously Champions League as well. And I still feel as if they got a shot at reeling in Manchester City. So, a
lot of people would have watched the game last night in Paris. Frustrated you? Quality not good.
Yeah, I was disappointed with it. Yeah, I mean, I haven't read too many papers today. I'm not exactly sure what most people would have thought of it, but yeah, you know, the big thing before the game is you'd expect, oh, top class players, world class players all over the pitch. Look about the benches. Oh, this, you know, attacking players, got to be goals, this type of thing. But no, very few of those players. Mbappe probably the pick of the bunch in terms of impact in the game, shown somewhere near his best, but the rest for me, individually, even collectively, to be honest with you, the cohesion, the quality of the football, generally speaking, I thought was bang average, absolutely bang average. Yeah, there's not much more I can say. Some decent defending, to be honest with you. Some decent defending from Madrid. I think the two central defensive partnerships actually are quite reasonably strong. I like Kimpembe and Marquinhos for PSG. I think they're solid, them two.
Alaba now slotting into centre half, he can do anything he wants.
No, to be fair to him, like he done all right last night, to be fair to him. But
so was it a problem with the midfields to get the game going properly?
Not just the quality of football in terms of moving the ball quickly, like combination play, clever, you know, incisive stuff, individual quality. Made the likes of Di Maria was poor. Messi on the periphery of the game, totally out of sorts.
Talk to us about Messi. I saw L'Equipe gave him a 3 out of 10. They're famously harsh in their player ratings.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah.
But talk to us about Messi.
Well. No, he didn't play well. Maria looked gone, actually. Legs looked gone. Even the PSG kind of midfield, which I think is, you could question anyway, at the best of times. You know, Paredes in there, I'm not a huge fan of. You know, tries to physically impose himself, a bit of an enforcer. It goes down too easy for me. He's always crying, whinging, looking for free kicks. He's kind of efficient with his passing no more. Pereira is probably the same. Physical presence, but not a ball player. Not going to hurt you with his pass. And probably Verratti, the only one who can get on the ball. But he's not a runner, Verratti. None of those midfield three almost got beyond the ball for the whole night.
Mm.
So none of them are getting beyond the front three in terms of getting into the last third.
Yeah.
Generally, you'd say, oh, does it really matter when you got the best three forward line in the world? Well, last night they weren't the best in the world. They were carrying two. Last night was only in Mbappe.
I didn't get to watch it that closely. What does Messi not having a good game look like in 2022 at his age? Is he just not getting involved, or when he's getting on the ball, is he not able to influence things and get away from people the way he could once?
Yeah, I'd say not working hard to get on the ball last night, but then you'd have to factor in terms of quality. Then when he's looking down the pitch at those central midfielders, can you find me with that Ivan Needle pass? Obviously, the Real Madrid, you know, midfield three were kind of quite narrow, but very static even still. You know, you got to work, you got to sprint 10 yards to make an angle to give the fella in possession, you know, give an angle to receive the ball. So a little bit kind of one pace in his movement to begin with. And then when he starts drifting back into those deep central midfield positions, that, well, forget it then, like, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And you haven't got a centre. A couple of times he got down the sides, put crosses into the box, but he's not in the box. He's playing as a nine last night, false nine central striker, but He comes deep. He doesn't get the ball. It goes wide. Cross comes into the box. He's not in the box.
Yeah, okay.
You know, you're looking at the opposite winger being the only one. None of the midfield three are making it into the box. Mm. Your centre forward's not making it into the box. Mm. So now it's almost your opposite winger. Mbappe is the only one making it into that 6-yard box. And that's easy to defend.
Those runs hurt because 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get the ball, but you have to make those runs and they're not doing it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, that's only kind of one fact, but that's how I saw it last night. Obviously, it was a particularly poor game from Messi. Don't get me wrong. Generally speaking, you know, if you play with that false nine, City do it, that nine drops in. Liverpool do it when Firmino plays our job. They drop in deep. That's the trigger for the two wide men to go whoosh in behind. Now, Mbappe does it. Di Maria can't do it. Neymar does it to a point, doesn't really want to do it, wants to come and get on the ball and do his thing.
Yeah.
As we know, he came on last, couple of nice touches. People are saying, oh, it really impacted the game. Didn't think so, to be honest with you.
Mm.
Done his usual little thing, you know. So, no, I was disappointed with PSG and to a certain extent Madrid as well, but shouldn't be that surprised, Madrid. Not an awful lot's changed there. Their front three is still the same.
Mm.
You know, Casemiro, Kroos and Modric, that's not getting any younger. That midfield three, Benzema as well, coming back from injury, was out with swords. Vinicius, a couple of nice moments.
Yeah.
Sensio couldn't get into the game. Carvajal had a bit of a stinker, right back up against them. Mbappe really struggled.
So do you think it was just bad night at the office stuff, or if you're a Man City or a Liverpool, are you feeling, geez, we're kind of ahead of the pack here?
I think they are ahead of the pack.
Yeah.
I think that's a fact, even before.
This was more than just bad night at the office from Madrid and PSG.
It was a bad night in the office, and they are better than that. Don't get me wrong, but even still, I'd still have Liverpool and Manchester City favourites above them.
And on Mbappe, the goal is a beautiful thing, obviously, for many reasons. Jamie Carragher, I was just watching post-match again. I didn't get to watch it the way I would want it because it was in here. But Carragher said, leaving aside the goal for a minute, it was one of the best Mbappe performances he's seen, just from start to finish, getting on the ball, looking dangerous, really in the game. What did you make of him across general play? Everybody can see the genius of the goal.
Yeah, no, I thought he played well. I'm not sure it was that type of performance is the best. No, I wouldn't buy into that, to be honest with you. We spoke about this bit on off air, Joe, didn't we, 10 minutes ago, about, you know, people are going, feel as if they got to go over the top, like, sure, in terms of analysis of players. He played well. He had a good game. He impacted the game. Kind of won the penalty. Got the winning goal. I'd still have a question mark about him for me in terms of the quality of his finishing. What I'd say, I'm not one to go googling in terms of player stats, as you know, left, right, and centre, Joe. But just in terms of my eyes, and when I look at him, I think, yeah, individual quality, gets himself into some great positions, but almost feels to me as if he needs two good chances to score. Generally speaking, mm-hmm. You know, when he gets in front of the goal, don't always think, haven't got that sensation of he ain't going to miss. Yeah, it was a great finish last night. But generally speaking, for me, you know, talk about the best in the world, you know, big transfer in the summer. He's probably a £150 million player. He's going to be a free transfer in the summer, don't get me wrong. But still feel as if when I look at him now, I think at the end of his career, he plays for another 10 years, his numbers are going to be nowhere near in terms of, you know, the present day players like Salah, obviously Ronaldo, Messi previously, but even the likes of Mo Salah, Lewandowski, like players like this, I don't feel as if his numbers are going to be as good as that. You know, there's going to be that perception in terms of his all round game, his speed, dropping the shoulder, the little drag back, this is mess, and he'll score some wonderful goals.
Mm.
He got a great goal last night, but I'm still not sure when he goes to the big leagues, if he does, looks as if he's going to go to Spain. I'm not sure if he'll ever arrive in the Premiership. Not exactly sure. Still young, he's still developing, don't get me wrong. He could improve that part of his game, but doesn't strike, never has, as kind of a clinical finisher in those positions.
And of the generation coming through, who does strike you as the one? Is it Haaland for you?
Well, it depends what you're talking about. Finisher, does Haaland fright me when he receives the ball toward the yards from goal on the wing in a 1v1 situation like Mbappe does? Are you worried? No, you're not. Because, you know, he's just going to knock the ball sideways and run into the box and wait for the next ball to be delivered in between the posts. But in terms of a finisher, absolutely, he's by far more of a clinical finisher than Mbappe, but he's obviously a different beast, as we know.
And then, if I'm more specific on the one, the person in 3-4 years where if you stop anyone in the street and say, who's the best player in the world, who's the most likely answer, do you think?
Who's going to develop into the...
Yeah, who do you think in 3-5 years when you stop someone in the street and say, who's the best player in the world? For the last 15 years, it's been Messi, and then Ronaldo's great too. That's been the answer, the stock answer. Anyone jumping out to you as the obvious stock answer to come?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting one. I don't think there is actually, to be honest with you, I don't think there is that one standout player. If you're talking about all over the pitch, like forward, midfield, if you're about like anywhere.
I'm talking anywhere.
I like the lad at Monaco, to be fair. I've seen him a couple of times. I haven't seen him enough, to be honest with you. Too shamey. He's a central midfield player, very similar to like Pogba. He's actually in the round the French national team now. He's a very young player.
Right.
And he's playing his club football at Monaco. I've seen him play a few times. Really impressed with him. And he's a little bit raw, but still playing at a very, very high level.
Yeah.
He strikes me as somebody potentially could really develop into a top-class player.
You see, we could have a phase where it's not as clear-cut as it was with Messi, because Messi's so extraordinary. Because you remember that, if we charted off the top of our heads for a second, late 90s into turn of the century, Brazilian Ronaldo seemed to be kind of top of the tree. And then maybe you segue into, I'd say, Zidane territory, wouldn't you, for a period?
And yeah, then Rivaldo, you had all these type of players, but not, you wouldn't say head and shoulders.
No, Ronaldinho had a couple of years where it was really, really big. But then Messi came along and it was like, well, this is the Messi decade. But you would say before Messi, it wasn't clear cut for a decade in the same way. We didn't
I'd agree
that.
With you, Henri. There was plenty of them, absolutely top class.
There was
class,
a few volumes. You would have got different answers in the street kind of thing.
No, I think you're right. That acts as Messi and Ronaldo have kind of elevated to another level. Numbers, people now.
Yeah.
Off the back of them are now talking numbers which we never did before, you know what I mean? So
who's scoring 50-60 a season? It was insane.
Yeah. And Salah's probably Salah's numbers can't be far off that at the moment.
No.
Outstanding, you know what I mean?
No,
it'd be interesting to see whether he signs in a contract extension for Liverpool. That'd be the most interesting thing to see there. I think that's the big talk about the elephant in the room. I mean, that's practically the elephant in the room with a 2-2 on, banging away the drums in the corner.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
29 years old. Would you give him what he wanted if you're Liverpool?
No. No, I think it's ridiculous. I don't understand it. I got to give him what he wants. I don't actually understand what that means. I mean, so what's he wants? If he wants £1 million a week, you give him £1 million. And you break your wage structure. And then you got every player banging on your door.
Well, certainly, whatever the £1 million a week, you're certainly breaking your wage structure. Absolutely you are.
I don't think you can do it, because you can't. Anybody who comes through the door there, you can't sit them down and look them in the eye and say, look, there's a wage structure, we'd love to give you one, but we have a wage structure, this football club, and this is as much as we can give you. I mean, that goes out the door. Once you go down that road, it's all over.
Well, I hear you, but that's also a lie. Liverpool could pay a lot more in wages if they wanted to. They just have their wage structure.
Well, exactly. Wage structure, course,
but they could pay more.
They could up
the general wage bill to keep Salah and to keep other players.
Of course they could.
Happy.
They could give him exactly what he wanted. I wouldn't personally, to be honest with you. My attitude towards it is, I feel as if at the moment, if you want to go down this road, I feel as if Liverpool have gone as far as they can. And I think Liverpool are pushing as much as they can. This isn't a situation which I have with other clubs, professionals, young players, where clubs are trying to get them on the cheap. Trying to get them on the cheap on a contract, give them peanuts, you know, take advantage. A lot of clubs generally do.
Yeah.
I think everybody agrees that's not the case with Mo Salah, is it? Liverpool want to keep him. They're desperate to keep him. And all I feel is that Liverpool are pushing as much as they can. What's that number? It might be £300,000 a week.
Mm.
That's as much. I think they've gone as far as they can go. Maybe he's looking for 4, give or take, whatever that number is. It doesn't really matter. I just feel as if at the moment, if that's where we are, Mo Salah's come out. And I don't like the comments he's come out with. It's down to Liverpool now. Yeah. It's not to do with me.
They know
it's
what I
decision.
Want. They know what I want.
Yeah, I don't like that. Because that's not the case. It's not as simple as that. I feel as if it's for Mo Salah now to reach towards Liverpool and to give a little bit. That's how I feel. I feel as if Mo Salah has been absolutely unbelievable signing for Liverpool Football Club. He's been absolutely fantastic. He's been a credit. He's improved as a player. His numbers we've spoken about, he's absolutely outstanding. Big part of Liverpool's success the last couple of years. Champions League, league title, the whole shebang. Yak, yak, yak.
But hang on.
Let me finish.
Shoot, yeah, go on.
But Liverpool, in just equal measure, have been good for Mo Salah.
Agreed.
Mo Salah wasn't perceived to be the best player in the world when he arrived from Roma for the price that he did. And Liverpool, for me, have an argument to say we've made him a world-class player because they've constructed a world-class team around him and elevated him, helped elevate
There's
him
no doubt.
Into
There's
that
no doubt.
Position.
There's no doubt.
And for that reason, that's why I'm saying...
You feel he owes them something.
He needs to recognise that. I think that needs to be... Mo Salah needs to recognise that and to actually hold his cap to Liverpool. And for me, he does that by signing this contract, if it is for 50 grand or 75 grand less than ideally that he'd want, and he might get a Real Madrid and he might get a Barcelona, which I'm sure his agent is telling the football club. I think it's a massive mistake for him if he leaves Liverpool Football Club. The reception he got the other night, Joe, when he came back from the African Nations, he was second half, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He came on the evening game at Liverpool. The whole crowd went up. Wow, what a feeling. How do you walk away from that? 50 grand, 100 grand a week? Surely it can't matter.
I hear what you're... it's very hard to argue what you're saying in some respects. And yet, Mo Salah will be entitled to think to himself, well, I agree with everything Kenny said there. And yet, we are where we are. So he's sitting at home and he knows.
He can't agree with it.
He can, but he can say, I now need to think about the next 5 years. And
I appreciate, don't give your family secure. Go look after me kids
no,
and blah.
No, it's actually not about that. His family are fine. Mo Salah's fine. Money's not going to be a problem.
What are you talking about the next 5 years? What are you talking about?
Well, he's like.
It's football. Are you telling me there's a better football environment out there for Mo Salah?
Probably not. Than Liverpool probably not.
So what are you talking about? What's the argument the next 5 years?
The argument is.
You're saying it's not financial, it's not football. So what is it?
The argument is.
Why wouldn't he sign?
The argument is, and you're going to scoff at this, pay me what I'm worth.
Oh, because, Lee, that's weak.
No. Because why should Mo Salah.
What about pay me what's fair?
Well, they can equate to the same thing. Because if Cristiano Ronaldo is getting 485 a week.
That. I'm not having it.
Well,
no,
Kenny,
I'm
you have to have
it.
That because that's the
I'm
market.
Not having that argument.
Listen.
If you're going to reduce it, that argument, well, no. Forget it.
But you see, here's the point.
But if that's his thought process, show him the door. Get him out the door for 100 million in the summer and go and reinvest. They might have his price in there anyway.
He's entitled to get paid market rate. Now, these are obscene things to say when you're talking about these sums.
But the market rate.
But here's the thing, Kenny. Why should Mo Salah not get that money? And why should John Henry get it instead? Like Liverpool have this, we have a wage structure. That's just this self-imposed thing to keep profits up for Fenway.
I think it's a lot more simpler than that.
Kenny, there's so much money in the game. Why shouldn't Mo Salah be entitled to it? More so than John Henry. Why should Ronaldo get 485? Why should De Bruyne get 385? Why should David De Gea get 375? Why should Jadon Sancho get 350?
There's always going to be somebody earning a little bit more.
Sorry. I'm not finished yet because this is the point. It's more than just somebody. Why should Jadon Sancho get 350? Aubameyang was getting 350. Lukaku's getting 325. Havertz is getting 310. Raheem Sterling, 300. Why should Mo Salah...
That's what drives you. Well, if that's what drives you, well, if that's why you wake up in the morning, where's my next quid going to come? But how can I earn an extra 10, 20 quid?
But why should
fair enough.
Why should Mo Salah turn around and say,
if that's his attitude, there's no point in us talking about from the footballing side of view in terms of Liverpool, his relationship to fans. That clearly doesn't come into it. If you're going to purely bring it down to a monetary argument, if that's all it is... Yeah, don't sign the contract.
Mm.
Don't sign the contract. Let them sell you or see out the last year of your contract and go on a free and end the big bucks, a bit like Mbappe. If that's what it comes down to, purely monetary argument, it's easy. It's an easy decision. Don't sign it. Don't sign it. Let the club sell you in the summer or walk off in a free transfer the year after. But it's a massive mistake. He'll never find himself in a better position than he is from a footballing point of view. Yes, he can earn a few extra quid.
Mm.
How much money do you need, Joe? And it's simple thing to say, how much money literally do you need? These sums are huge. This isn't the argument of like 20 years ago. I'd be speaking to somebody in the dressing room and saying,
no, I accept that.
Look, I'm on 600 at the moment. They're only offering me another 200. I think I'm worth three.
Sure. No, I accept that.
Look, I got me rent on the flat and obviously the car pay. Yeah.
No,
those days have gone. Like,
gone,
you know,
I get
the figures now, literally, Joe, for me, how much money do you need?
But can you understand the human psychology of being maybe the best player in the league and being asked to be 10th or 15th on the payroll?
No, I don't. I don't equate that. I'm at a level of football in terms. I'm the best centre forward in the world and I need to be paid. I need to have the most money paid to me. I don't see that correlation. I don't buy into that. That's not how I think. That might be easy for me to say. I haven't got his ability. I'm not earning.
Sure.
But I'd like to think if I was that in position, I wouldn't be doing those maths in the head. That's not how I'd see things.
Mm.
I really wouldn't. I'd be thinking...
I don't think you would either, to be fair.
I'm in a great place here. All I'd say to Mo, does he feel as if the club are pushing as far as they can? Are they looking to get me on the cheap, do me over?
Mm.
That's different.
Mm.
But if he genuinely feels... Do Liverpool supporters feel as if Liverpool are trying to get him on the cheap? I don't think so. If they're really pushing as far as they can within the confines of that wage structure, and he's going to be the best paid player at the football club.
Yeah.
Joe, in their history.
Yeah.
In their absolute history. And they've had some giants in the past, players. I know it's a different game, money in the game and all that.
Mm.
Absolute giants. and he's going to be the best paid player of them all. What? Why would you walk away from that? Why? Why? I don't understand it. Off the back of whatever it is, whatever that figure is, 50 grand, 100 grand a week.
We'll move on. Believe it or not, I hadn't planned to talk to you about that this evening. I don't know how we got onto that.
You started it.
Now that I think about it.
Liverpool are 3-0 down, Joe.
Back and listen. No, they're not. Podcast listeners, he started that, now that I think about it. You can flick back and listen. You brought it up. Will he sign the contract? The elephant in the room. You did bring it up. Okay, because of you, we have to take a short break, and then we'll get to Damien Duff, because Damien Duff was speaking in Dublin this afternoon. I know you're going to the game at Talca on Friday, so Damien Duff on the way. And the Manchester United leaks. I want to get your thoughts on leaky dressing rooms. It's still nil all between Inter and Liverpool, 74 minutes on the clock.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky, proud partner and supporter of the Republic of Ireland women's national football team.
This is News Talk.
Now, you're welcome back. Kenny Cunningham still here. Oof, we were on fire there, were we? Were we arguing or not? I think we were a bit. I thought it was a good conversation, but there's no hard feelings, Kenny.
Absolutely
Liverpool have just scored. Firmino with a header. We're just we did that classic thing during the ad break of we both checked our phones and weren't paying enough attention to the game, and we just both slightly missed the goal to tell you the brutal honest truth. So we're rewinding as we speak.
That teaches me. I was for the first time ever, I was actually doing some research.
Go on.
So I'll go on my phone and do a little bit of research for 30 seconds.
What were you checking?
Something sticking in my head, and that's when you obviously need to step in. Yeah, you're the anchor man.
I was getting ready for the next piece.
I just spoke to you about being the conductor there and the rugby at the weekend. You know what I mean?
So, well, it was Firmino with the goal. It was a header. It looked like he flicked. It looked like a really good header. I caught the end of the replay. But that's all I'm committing to. Whilst we fill in the details on the goal, Damien Duff, this is very exciting for the League of Ireland. I'm sure you agree. So today, for instance, it's just a standard League of Ireland managers press conference in advance of the game at Talca on Friday, and yet there's a huge media presence there because Damien Duff's there, so everybody wants to hear from Duffer. So OTB's Ashley O'Reilly was there. You can stick in your headphones, you can turn them on now, I'll give you a notice. I know it takes you about 3 minutes to get it on. I don't want you to miss the interview. So Ashley O'Reilly was there talking to Damien Duff this afternoon ahead of Shelburne's League of Ireland opener, which is at Talca Park against St Pat's, and it's going to be on Friday. You're going to the game, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to pop down. Yeah, right. Looking forward to it.
I'm sure lots of people will. So here's Damien Duff looking ahead to his very first game as Shelburne manager. Have a listen.
Damien, your first senior management role. How are you finding it so far?
Yeah, I guess in a strange way it's enjoyable. It's just 24/7 really. I'm wrecked, if I be brutally honest. But listen, it's been a long time coming. I think I'm in the gig 8-10 weeks, maybe more. And Friday will be on us soon, so looking forward to it.
And how has the training been with the lads? Is their fitness up to standard?
I hope so, yeah. Listen, we've worked them hard, all with the ball. I believe you can get fitter than ever with the ball rather than just running people, so that's the way we train. Like I said, I hope they've enjoyed it. I think they know the way we want to play, and listen, we see how it all unfolds on Friday night and beyond.
And how has the recruitment process been for you? How involved have you been in it?
Oh, it's not like England where we've scouts all around the country and Europe and this and that, head scouts, chief scouts. It's just myself and the staff. So, I guess more or less spent the last 2-3 months on Y Scout, watching 1,000,001 games, speaking to a lot of players. A lot of players telling me no, a few players telling me yeah. And listen, we finally got there. Everyone's in the house, full squad of players, fit, healthy, mostly young players, and raring to go.
Was that tough, that side of things?
Yeah, in a strange way, it's probably the toughest, most time-consuming thing I've ever done in my life. And then I guess it comes near the start of the season, maybe you haven't got a striker in or a certain position, you get a bit rattled. But I heard a lot of people telling me, just trust it, you'll get them. And listen, we did in the end. So I'm more than happy with the squad. They're brilliant and very exciting, and we love working with them every day.
And you've worked under some massive managers. How would you describe your management style?
Oh, I don't know. I guess probably hands-on, too hands-on. I need to get better at delegating. I just stick my oar into everything, whether it be Gavin with social media, telling him how to do his job, the medical side, everything. So I guess I'm young, enthusiastic, but I just need to calm down. So, yeah, listen, it's just emotion, love of the game. It's the way I was as a footballer, and I guess I'm the same as a coach.
And I'd just like to mention Celtic as well, if that's okay. I spoke with Neil Lennon recently. He mentioned just how well thought of you were at the club. How tough was it to leave, and how would you sum up your time there?
Well, that's very flattering coming from the gaffer. Listen, I love my time there. It's for any Irishman that loves football to go over there and play. Firstly, never got that. So then to go and coach was a special, special time. Won a lot of trophies. Not that I contributed to any of the magic. But yeah, it was just a special club. But listen, family's more important. So when your wife and your kids are back here, you know, my son for the first year was saying, "Daddy, stay for 9 and 10. But when we got to 9, he's like, "No, Daddy, when are you coming home?" So it changes the dynamic of things. So yeah, of course, I was going to come home then. From a professional point of view, it was the hardest decision ever. It was, I guess, gut-wrenching. But for a family point of view, it was an easy decision.
And just for on Friday night, how big of a moment is this for you? How would you sum it up in terms of career, life? How big of a moment is it?
I guess outside of family occasions, kids being born, etc., it's probably the biggest day in my life, I guess you can say. Yeah, making your debut for Ireland, Chelsea, whatever, winning leagues. But that's the way I view it at the minute. Maybe it's just because it's fresh and in my mind now. But yeah, I guess there's just so much more responsibility on you now as a manager. A lot of people rely on you. So without doubt, the biggest day of my life, yeah.
And Shelburne, it's a giant, not a sleeping giant.
Yeah, listen, people have cross-checked me 3 months ago. I think I call it a sleeping giant, but I just think the work that's gone on behind the scenes, I think it's wrong to call that. So that's why I corrected Johnny the other day.
Yeah,
it is. For me, it's a joint of a club, Tolka, the name, the history, the trophies it's won. It doesn't guarantee you success now, but I just thought it's good. It wasn't me saying it for, you know, act the big man or let the rest of the league know we're here. Not at all. It was for the players because I want to put pressure on them. I want them to know how big the jersey is that they're wearing. So, listen, that was the only reason it was said. Not to, you know, annoy people or prod people. It was for our dressing room, the Shelburne dressing room, nobody else.
There you are. Damien Duff speaking with Ashley O'Reilly ahead of the league opener on Friday night. As we were speaking there, Mo Salah has put Liverpool 2-0 up. So he's hooked a ball from inside the area through a few bodies and it's bundled into the bottom corner. Keeper didn't really move, probably saw it late. And suddenly, after, huffing and puffing for maybe 70-odd minutes, Liverpool suddenly 2-0 up in this tie. No away goals, of course, we should say, in this year's competition. We had a look back at the Firmino goal, by the way. It was a flick from a corner, from post. You reckon keeper might have done better?
Yeah, it's a great header. Don't get me wrong. Mm. Firmino, just real touch of class. Like, yeah. Decent bit of movement to the near post, but really he's no right to score from there. He's well beyond the near post there. I mean, it's a brilliant header. He knows exactly what he's doing. Just there's pace on the ball. Mm. Just trying to cushion it towards inside that far post. I think the keeper has to do better. If you look at him, I think his body weight's taking him onto his left-hand side. He's got to plant his feet and go back. 37 years of age. Wasn't the most athletic in terms of his movement there. But a brilliant header from Firmino. And then obviously Salah's put it to bed. A bit scruffy from Milan's point of view. You know, kind of header down from Van Dijk, wasn't it? De Vrij, I think it was. A bit of a scratch. He was off balance. Didn't get his clearance. Didn't get the ball out of the penalty box. And Salah just sensing an opportunity. A bit of a scuffed shot, wasn't, but went through a few legs and wrong foot the goalkeeper again. So yeah, looks like game over.
I was watching you there, watching Duffer. As you were watching Duffer, I was watching you, and you were smiling to yourself a few times, looking up like a proud older brother at young Damien. First foray. Did you get on well with him? Do you like Duffer? Delighted to see him here in the League of Ireland doing his thing.
Yeah, yes to all those questions, I suppose. I do like him, obviously. Obviously, we've shared history in terms of playing for him, but this is different. That's in the past now. Duff has probably said that as well. It's all about what's in front of him. Yeah, I'm really excited, actually. Really interested in terms of how it's going to go for him this year. He's had a big job there. I think people shouldn't underestimate in terms of the off-season, the amount of work he's had to do. He's had to rebuild the whole squad, really. If you look at most of the teams in the division this year, they're chopping and changing 4 or 5 players. They've lost a couple. They're adding a couple. Mm. The spine of the team, the bones of the squad are there. That hasn't been the case with Damien. Pretty much the whole squad is gone. He's had to put the whole thing together again. So Aaron McAnuff's brother's come in as the latest, isn't he? Jordan McAnuff has come in from Arsenal. Young player there. Duffer spoke highly of him. He must be a talented boy. Looking forward to seeing him play. So yeah, that's a huge challenge. You know, getting those players in, it's just a short period of time, and then rolling out in terms of you know what you expect of them. You know, the tactical setup. He spoke there about, you know, what we want. So the work's been done.
He does seem like a workaholic, the way he talks about the game. I mean, and you know the stories, even when he was managing the Shamrock Rovers kids and he was making lunch boxes for them at 6 a.m. sessions, and you know, he said there to Aisling, I'm wrecked, you know, I can't not be involved in every aspect. And well, maybe look, over time he'll
he will have to balance
it out because
he needs to be right mentally, physically. He needs to right, you know, he can't overexert himself, you know, put too much pressure on himself, and he's right, he'll have to delegate to other people. He's got Joey Bryan there alongside him, the footballing point of view. I'm not sure exactly who else on the squad. So, yeah, that must be the hardest thing to do, because you want to involve yourself in everything. You're enthusiastic. You know, you really want to impact things. You want to work the players individually, collectively, preparation, training, the whole thing, the psychological aspect. So, yeah, it's great. I'm looking forward to it. Should be a great atmosphere there. Friday night down Talca Park, can't wait.
Well, I suspect his press conferences every week are going to be well attended. He's going to have that effect on the league. Just before we go, actually, before we go into the Salah thing, I was hoping to talk to you a bit more about this, because the Manchester United dressing room seems to be leaky in the extreme. So it's emerged now that Rangnick's number two there, Chris Armas, who I think is American, the players are calling him Ted Lasso. And it seems that there are leaks left, right and centre. Even just this evening, a German journalist, Christian Falk, had a story which said that Marcus Rashford, Harry Maguire, a couple of the English players don't like Cristiano Ronaldo trying to take over the dressing room in a sense and to run it with his own clique. And so Rashford, probably what he shouldn't do, but he's perusing Twitter and he sees this and he's written back to say, are we just making things up now? Please stop looking for divides. And the journalist has written back saying, you know, this is true. And on we go. Gary Neville was doing his podcast on the weekend after a game, and it was interesting. He was absolutely saying that he is now hearing the leaks coming from players' agents and players' camps. And this is what he just say about it. You can stick on your headphones again.
Well, I thought that was downright disrespectful on Friday. The fact that they were describing the number two of Ralph Rangnick as Ted Lasso. I didn't find it funny at all. I thought it was disrespectful. I thought it was disgusting, in fact. In fact, it actually summed up what I think of them, that they are disrespectful. I think if I was Ralph Rangnick and his number two, to be honest with you, I would gain strength from that, because I wouldn't want to be on the same page as some of those players that are leaking that story. I always remember when I joined Sky and we had the Champions League in the early years, and I went over to Napoli to do a game. I don't know if you were doing that game in Napoli. It was Chelsea v Napoli, and Villas Boas was the manager. And I don't know if you remember, he left out, I think, Frank Lampard, Essien, Cole. He left out four or five prominent players. He was obviously in his sort of last days, and managers do that, don't they? They just sort of, like you say, free hit. And I always remember sat there at lunchtime and with the Sky sort of team that were there that day, and the calls coming through to our team and other journalists that were sat around us, you know, slagging off the manager and sort of saying that, you know, leaking team news. And I was like, does this actually happen? Players' agents, players' PR teams are briefing the media on a match day about what's going on in the club. And it was the first time that I'd ever sort of seen it and known it happen. And it really unnerved me. But it's happening at Manchester United now. They're at it. They're at it. The PR teams, their marketing teams, their agents, they're at it. They're protecting themselves. They're in self-preservation of their own player. But what they don't realise is, unfortunately, that when they do go and speak to the media, those media people come and speak to us. So we find out about it. So we know who's briefing. And the reality of it is, we don't like it. Now, I'm not going to obviously, you know, we're not going to throw people under a bus here, because obviously, we, you know, you have that sort of journalistic respect. But the fact of the matter is, they're at it. Just like the Chelsea team were all those years ago, this Manchester United team are at it. Self-preservation, looking after one another, excuses all the time. Stop it. Don't try and be clever. Don't try and blame anybody else. Don't try and push your messages out and thinking that we're going to buy it. We're not buying it. None of us are buying it. And the fans can see right through it.
So we only have about 2 minutes here, Kenny, but it just speaks to what we all sense about this club. Nothing's really working at the moment.
Yeah, no. It seems to be broken a little bit in terms of the dressing room, kind of little cliques, people pulling in different directions. So, yeah, no, there's nowhere to go. You feel as if the relationship between the manager and the majority of the players, there's distance there. I'm not too sure there's a healthy respect between certain players in the dressing room and the manager as well. So, yeah, on a load of different levels, it's not good. Something has to change, and the manager has to change, to be honest with you. A bit of sympathy what Gary Neville's saying there in terms of the manager, but he's not the right fit for me.
No.
From the outside looking in, I thought it was a mistake when he came out, when he first went in and said, yeah, I'd be interested in taking this on as manager. Thought that was a big mistake from the start. But even in the intervening period, I'm looking at him, I'm not feeling it, to be honest with you. I need to go and target our next manager. For me, it's Pochettino, but I actually wouldn't be waiting until the end of the season. I was actually thinking that PSG get knocked out over two legs against Real Madrid, I'd go big to get him straight away. Because as bad as it's got Manchester United of late, there's still a chance of that four Champions League spot. Amazingly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think with the right man at the helm, those problems in the dressing room, I think, I wouldn't say they sort themselves out totally. I think some players will have to go out the door in the summer, but it needs the right manager, the right type of personality in there to do that. I don't think he's there at the moment. They need to bring him in. I think that's the first thing. So get him in sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Did you have a dressing room that was leaky and you were coming in on a Monday going, lads, why is this story?
No, it wasn't around that. Yeah, that type of thing.
Bigger clubs, maybe.
Social media, yeah. You'd have the grumblings and this and that, people not in the team having it. But that never found its way out into the agent or on social media and found its way into the public domain, really.
It must be disconcerting, though, if you're a good pro and you're coming in and we're all over the back pages with, lads, who let it out that we're calling your man Ted Lasso? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, it's a little bit of comedy. People be laughing at it, but it's not what you want, professional outfit. Not just that, it's just if you it's Manchester United, players want to be, even the players themselves, short career, you want to be successful, you want to be part of a winning team.
Yeah.
You want to be in a good dressing room, everybody pulling together. But that's not the case of Manchester United. And I think there's some good players in there, some good personalities, don't get me wrong, but yeah, they need it's to get, for working. Me, for me, it's the manager.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing that's got to change there. Is the manager.
Okay, we just need Neville to start naming names pretty soon. That's when things get really, really spicy. Our football show coverage is brought to you by Sky. Watch every Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season. Still Liverpool 2-0.